Much like cooking, company culture is an art. It requires a lot of ingredients, time, and tools. But a culture with the wrong ingredients can leave a bad taste in everyone's mouth. Growing up in a successful family business in the service industry, Jill Raff is particularly attuned to the importance of both customer experience and employee experience, and she's made it her business to help companies with both. This week on Next in Q, we touch on why company culture matters, visible signals of culture issues, how EX, employee experience, impacts CX, customer experience, how to gauge company culture during an interview, strategies to improve your company culture, and the one ingredient to company culture that you can never have enough of. Let's get to it.
Welcome to Next in Q, the podcast for contact center and customer experience professionals. Next in Q is brought to you by Happy To, your service team's personal coach, giving them the process, resources, and insights to deliver the perfect customer experience over the phone. Learn more at HAPPITU.com. Now, here's your host, Rob Dwyer.
Hey, everyone. Thank you for joining another episode of Next in Q. Today, I'm joined by Jill Raff. Welcome to the show, Jill. How are you?
Hi, Rob. I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for being gracious with your time and joining me. We are going to talk about company culture today and why it's important and how to fix broken company culture. But before we do that, I'd like to get to know you a little bit. So tell me about Jill and kind of how you got to where you are today.
Oh, gosh. Well, how I got to being an EX to CX advisor, which is employee experience to customer experience, really started with the foundation of my childhood, having the fortune of growing up truly in the McDonald's family culture. My parents and grandparents were early owner operators of the franchise. They had store number 150 in 1959. Fourth year of inception of the corporation. And so I literally grew up working there, like answering the phone when I was too little to do anything else, you know, working my way up through all the different processes and systems and hearing my dad and seeing how he spoke with his employees and now interviewing people who work for him and hearing their huge respect and memories all these years later of the impact that they had. And that's really the crux of what I'm doing today. And I think where it started. Now, I've had multiple lives, as I say, in my careers. I've been a fashion designer. I've been a food stylist. I have all kinds of education around those things. A real estate agent, was dual state in Texas and New York, now just in Texas. But throughout all those things, that common thread, that golden thread for me is the focus on people and your interaction and prioritizing the human element of business.
Now, I love that, but we have to back this truck up and we have to talk about what a food stylist is. Tell me more about that.
Sure. The food stylist is the person who has baked or cooked the food. Well, for editorial work. So for like cookbooks and magazines and food, like morning shows, that's editorial. So I've actually had to go out and buy the food, cook it, bake it, prepare it, set it up for the camera, for the set. Food packaging, advertising is commercial food styling. And for that, I would use the products, of course, that's being sold. And so I would sort through to find the beauties, as we call them, the most perfect pecan half or, you know, chip or pulling, you know, if I'm cookies, making sure that I have the right, you know, things that are inviting. And So it's basically the person who makes the food look enticing and makes you want to make that recipe or buy that product.
What was the hardest food to deal with when you were trying to find that the version of perfection?
Honestly, I did some work for Godiva, and it was advertising and packaging. And that was really challenging. Chocolate work. So I went to Le Cordon Bleu in Paris, and I have my what they call grand diplôme, which was in pastry and cuisine. And my last third of my pastry diploma was in chocolate. And it's tricky to work with. It is truly a science and an art. But with this, like there was some where I had to make sure that it was tempered just right, so I had to get into that. But using their products where I had to cut through and or have just the right pull, the movement or the cream in the inside and without the chocolate breaking through going into it. Like there was a lot of technical stuff involved in that. And there was one that was actually really fun that wasn't so difficult, but they're Lady Godiva. They have, in gold and bronze. So we did it was almost like an excavation. So I used cocoa powder around it and mimicked that as if it was like the mountains or the side of a hill or, the cocoa powder was like the dirt from the land. And so I really just used a paintbrush and kind of just played with that. So that was really fun. But the challenge was definitely the actual chocolate pieces themselves.
I would imagine the best part of that is potentially eating and cleaning up the mess when you're done.
My family was very happy with what I brought home. Absolutely. Because you have to start with so many pieces to make sure that you get what you need, right? So, sometimes you'll cut through it and there'll be an air pocket. So you can't use that, those kinds of things. So we had
That's a shame.
lots and lots of extras. And then, their coffee and their Godiva liqueur. And oh, it was definitely a good job to come home with for sure.
I would imagine there's definitely the bonus to finding the pieces that you cannot use.
And the extras, once you get it, they can't return them. So, it was great. My kids were
Could be.
happy.
Yeah, I bet. Well, that is fascinating to me, but we are going to talk about culture, and I mean the company kind, not the milk kind. So we probably need to switch gears a little bit. This last few years has been just a really eye-opening experience, I think, for a lot of companies. So I think there is a renewed focus on company culture, but for those who maybe are not putting that focus on, tell me, why is company culture so important?
I think, first of all, just the way you laid that up was so important because truly the pandemic has heightened the awareness and the appreciation and acknowledgement of the need for company culture. Prior to the pandemic, this was something that I've been talking about. It's been my point of view for a long time prior to COVID. But if nothing else, I'm glad that during this, as bad as it is, that always evokes change. And it made business owners stop to recognize we are nothing without our people. Like, we can have this great product, we can have an amazing service, but if we don't have the right people in place who are on board with our values, our vision, our mission, who are creating that company culture and living that company culture so that our customers feel it in everything that we do, then we're nothing. You cannot communicate that. You cannot deliver on your brand promise without having outstanding employee experience first. And so that's crucial for establishing a company that you want to sustain, to scale, to grow, to become known for who you are and what you value. So absolutely, I think these last few years have shown us that it is it's inevitable that our people are going to convey that culture or lack thereof, good or bad. So you may as well make the decision to prioritize it and put investment dollars towards creating that right from the beginning. Going back, reassessing, because if you're working truly, if you're working still from pre-2020 operations and systems, you're outdated. You are not going to make it. You must reassess now your values, your vision, and your mission. And as we said before we started recording, I recently did a workshop at a conference. It was actually for a restaurant conference, Mid-America Restaurant Conference and Expo. And it was really awesome because we saw how people understood the need of either documenting what those values, visions, and missions are in order to create the culture. You know, they thought they were leading by it, but nothing was ever documented. So of course it's never going to be followed through if you don't have it within your systems. Or those who said, oh my gosh, everything has changed. We need to go back and reevaluate.
Yeah. Talking to people in CX, and certainly this is not true of everyone, right? But there are always a lot of talk about systems, about identifying things about your customers, about personalization, about making it effortless for the customer. But to your point, all of that starts with the employees. Like, it doesn't matter what kind of technology you have. The brands that we think of that really just exude loyalty, the brands that are lovable, for the most part, the people that work there love working there. And that's what makes them stand apart, not their CRM.
Right, exactly. Yeah, 100%.
So when you look at a company, what are some of the signals, visible signals or auditory signals or whatever the case may be, for you that either send up a red flag and say, well, there's a culture problem here, or maybe are those things where you go, they've got a great culture here and I know because of this.
So do you want to start with the bad or the good?
let's start with the bad.
Okay, we'll get down and dirty. Well, I think right from the beginning, you can tell that internally, you can tell there's a bad culture because you have staffing problems. Now, granted, everyone has staffing problems now because of COVID, but I have spoken to business owners who are not facing such dire problems. And why? It's because they've established that core team inside. They've established their culture, which not just a culture, but a culture that prioritizes their people first. And so when you find that you're not attracting the talent that you want, that's a sign of a bad culture. When you're finding that you're making butter more than a business, right? The churn of your people, the turnover is so bad, that's a definite sign that you've got a problem inside. When you have chaos and a lack of cohesion, both within the depth of your company and within your teams, that's a sure sign as well. And people feel that. So not only does this chaos affect and is contagious and within your team, but it's very much felt by your customers, your end customers. So I think of customers internally as well. So your internal customers are your employees, and your external or your paying customers. And very often, I would say 98, 99% of the time when we talk about customers, it could be referred to either way. And most people think of just the end customer. Of course, my focus from EX to CX is focused starting on the EX. But so when customers don't feel taken care of, Rob, guess what? That's a sign of really bad culture. When the customers feel like there's a lack of knowledge or training from the employees who they are relying on for that support with whatever product or service they're hoping to buy or get help with, that's a clear sign. When you have this frustration within and without, those are all signs of a bad culture. Now, on the other hand, if you find that there's really great collaboration within your people internally, that they're not saying, oh, I'm not doing that. That's not my job, or that's not my responsibility. No, but instead they're like, you know what? Do you need help with that? This is an area that I'm really good at. I can see you're struggling, or I can see you have so much on your plate. What can I do to help you? Or I got you on this, right? Like having each other's back. That is the sign of an amazing company culture where the employers have established right from the beginning that this is a value that they have. This is the kind of culture they want, where they are helping each other out. That's really important. When you find that your employees are happy, when you see them smiling, when you see them speaking to one another, do you know it's been found that just moments of conversation increases productivity by 20%. Imagine just having a relationship, a connection with your fellow employees increases productivity. Who wouldn't want that, right? So increased productivity, the attraction and retention, the opposite of what we said before, you know, employees that are willing to go that extra mile and with a smile while doing so. Why? Because you've educated them, and we can talk about this after, but I believe that we don't just train our people. You have to educate them first, and then you get to the tactical training. But when you do this and you have them feeling like they're a part of something bigger, that they contribute, then you're going to create a sense of ownership and a sense of pride and empowerment. All of those things are signs of a great, strong company culture.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, also, if I'm the CFO or the CEO, some of those things that you mentioned are going to impact my bottom line in either a very negative manner or a very positive manner. I mean, you talked about the churn and that just the cost of losing employees, having to replace employees, and always being in that mode where I'm spending money on training, non-productive time. That's a huge loss, really, to my company's profitability. And on the flip side, when you talk about gaining 20% of productivity just by, you know, people having the opportunity to talk with each other, that's a huge bonus to that bottom line.
Right, 100%. I mean, all the hard costs that come along with, as you pointed out, with recruitment and retraining and all of that, and add to that the cost of the customers who are having the negative impact of the churn and the chaos and the lack of fluidity and knowledge of your internal people, you're going to lose customers as well. So your employee turnover is an indication, a leading indicator of your customer turnover as well. So you can't really separate the two. And I know a lot of times, and it's normal, especially the way business has always been done in the past. Part of my goal is to have that change now that people hopefully have had their eyes open with the pandemic, is to say, you know, right now it's not just about, it is, of course, you have to be in profit, right? You have to think about your bottom line, your number, but think about it differently. If you think about getting to that number through your people being your bottom line, the bottom line number will take care of itself. And just one other thing I want to throw out, Rob, if I may, you talked about the cost per employee and all the impact. On my website, I invite everyone to go check out. I actually have a calculator that shows you the cost per employee annually, and then you multiply that with the people that you have. There's a whole like little calculation there, and you put in your own numbers. So each business owner can put in, these are the amount of employees, these are the amount of hours they work, this is what I pay them, and then you will see it'll calculate right there in front of your eyes what your disengagement cost is based on the Gallup poll, 18%. So they can find that at jillraff.com, my name. And the last name is R-A-F-F, like French fry. So jillraff.com/calculator. And go see truly what it's costing you. I think you will be shocked.
So number one, we'll make sure and put that in the show notes. Number two, how long have you and your family been using the FF for French fry? I imagine it's been a long time given the business that your father was in.
Yeah, you know, actually, I created that. My dad used to say like Royal Air Force, you know, FF or F like France. And if I'm talking to a restaurant group or restaurant related, actually, I say, I mean, I spell out RAF because it's short. I say R for Ronald, A for apple pie, and double F for French fry. I just take it all the way.
Nice, nice. Go hard or go home. I see.
Exactly.
So that's good. All right, Jill, I have a question that I have had people ask me, and I don't have a good answer. And I'm hoping maybe you can help, because I know if people have asked me this question, then other people are thinking about that. And that is, if I'm looking at a potential new role, if I'm out there interviewing, how do I get a good grasp on what the company culture is like? Because I've talked to people that, you know, everything was good to go, and then they start and they realize, oh no, this was a horrible mistake. I don't want to be here because this is a toxic workplace. Are there things that you can do during that interview process to help you understand kind of what you may be getting into if you accept a role?
Absolutely. And really good to ask those questions up front. And sometimes it's hard. Let's face it, right? We, even from the other side, we all put on our best foot forward, our best face, right? So we don't always see. And I would encourage, number one, start with a curiosity mindset. Go in asking lots of questions. Because remember, it's a two-way street. They're not just interviewing that you, but you are interviewing them to see if you're the right fit for them. You are empowered, especially in today's environment, right? It's a buyer's market, so to speak. So that you're, as an employee, as someone looking for a job, you need to be coming in with lots of questions. And I would ask them right off the bat, because I do think this is the number one in my process, is the values, vision, and mission for a company. And so I think you need to think about that and ask them, you know, what is the important value? What are the important values for your company? What is your vision for your company? Where do you see it going? Because ideally you want to grow with that company. And what's your mission? Like, how do I take part in that mission? What is it that I'm going to do as a part of that company? And see, do they even have that established? Have they even thought about it? And if they haven't, oh, like, to me, like, you're headed for chaos. Like, how can you grow and be guided by something that they don't even know where they're headed and what it is? So I would ask that right off the bat. And then I would say, I would ask them, you know, where do you see me playing a role in this company? What, as a team member, you know, how do you see me as a role? And see, does it align with what you thought? Or does it give you opportunities to do something that maybe you hadn't thought of? I would ask, where's there room for contribution to be a part of this culture so that I can contribute to creating this culture and creating the teams? Where's there room for growth, or is there room for growth within your organization? And if so, where is that? Where's that path? Where's that lane? And how do I tap into that? How do I become a part of that? Because I want to grow with the company. So that's twofold, right? On one hand, you're letting them know you're growth oriented, you're committed to being there long term, you want to be a team player. So that's all great and positive. At the same time, you're learning, is this a place that even has the opportunity for me to grow into? I would ask them about their onboarding and ongoing. Like, what is your onboarding process? Is it a boot camp where they give you a 1 week or 2 week jammed session of intense, you know, fire hosing stuff? And what is it that they're teaching you? Is it all about the tactical, you know, training to do a specific task? Well, today, employees just don't want to do a task. We want to have meaning. We want to have purpose. We want to use all of us. We want to contribute. So ask, what is that process like? And do they have ongoing education? Is it just that boot camp and that's it? You're done and then you're off on your own? Or do they continue to invest in you as a person, as a whole person? Not, again, not only for doing that specific task, but for you to grow so that your skills will develop and can contribute to the company on a broader scale, not just doing that one role. Ask them what their training is like. Ask them, okay, this is a bit of a trick question, but because it's proprietary, nobody else is doing it unless they've worked with me, but ask them, do they have an educational plan? Do they have an educational system, not just an operational system, but do they have an educational manual of sorts? And probably most do not. And if they don't, tell them to speak to me. But that's important because within that is going to contain their values, their vision, their mission, who they are, what they stand for, and where you can contribute as a bigger role. And again, you know, I would also speak to other employees, find a way to get names of other people, speak to them, get their experience and understand what it's like for others as well.
Yeah, those are all really great suggestions. So thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Let's shift gears a little bit because that's great for helping someone who's looking at a potential opportunity, but there are lots of companies out there that are experiencing this churn. They are struggling to attract the right talent. We see it all the time, and we see it particularly in the service industries, which I know are very close to your heart. So let's talk about what deficiencies do you see most often, and how does a company go about fixing those?
You know, it ties in a little bit, Rob, with the previous question that you had about, you know, what questions do you ask coming in about a role? Well, it works both ways. So the company needs to be very specific about how they ask questions as they're interviewing to make sure that they are finding the right people, not because they like them and they're cool and they think, oh, they'd be fun to go to dinner with because they're so interesting. Well, that's great. Go to dinner with them. But it doesn't mean that they're right for the position and for your company, right? So you have to really establish first, is this someone who is in alignment with our values, our vision and mission? Are they going to help get us to that greater vision as we grow, mm-hmm. as we scale? Mm-hmm. And they should ask the prospective hire, you know, how do you see yourself contributing to the team? Open-ended questions, not questions where the response would be yes or no. You want to get them talking. You want to see who it is that's there with you. You know, how do you see yourself contributing to our vision, to our mission, to us as an organization? What do you value most as an employee, right? Like how have you shown your strengths in past jobs or situations that you've done? How do you handle conflict? Like really try to understand who's sitting in front of you and how they're going to work as a team. You know, do you prefer to work solo or do you prefer to be with a team? And if you're in a team, because that's going to be most of the situations, and we'll see how honest people are, but, you know, do you prefer to lead or do you prefer to have a plan be given to you, have the instructions and you follow and you know, they'll give you the instructions on how and what to do for the task. And it's important. One of the things that I'm also certified type coach facilitator, and that it's similar to Myers-Briggs, but a little bit different and really very user-friendly and has videos and really identifies the different personality traits in terms of communication with each other, in terms of putting that person, understanding that they're going to be utilizing their best strengths based on their personality, what comes to them intuitively. You know, if you're unhappy at work, how do you express that? You know, are they going to tell you that basically, you know, I don't like conflict, so I just kind of keep it in, and the next thing you know, they're quitting? You know, so trying to figure out what those things are. So rounding out all of those things in terms of deficiencies and culture that you talked about, You know, I think that ultimately a big deficiency is not having that clarity on what your company culture is. What does it mean? Who are you? Why do you exist? There are plenty of other companies, I'm sure, that will offer the same service or product that you do. So why do you need to exist? What makes you different? What values differentiate you? And I'm sure, again, probably many of these values overlap. So there needs to be a lot of hard work done, deep dives to figure out who we are. What message are we putting out in the world? How are we different? Why someone needs us versus someone else? And if you haven't done that, to me, I think that that is a big deficiency in your culture, because you can't communicate who you are if you don't clearly know who you are. And if you don't define it, guess what? It's going to be defined for you by your customers. So if you want to be in control, then you need to have that understanding, because otherwise you'll have no unity, no common purpose, no strategic purpose. You'll just be kind of running amok, and it will turn to chaos, and you won't be around for very long, because you're not going to attract anyone, because people don't know what they're attracted to. Right.
So I want to point out a few things that you didn't mention. Free food, ping pong table, unlimited PTO. You did not mention a lot of things that in the past, I think companies have thought, oh, hey, we can improve our culture by doing this, or right, we spruce up the building or whatever the case may be, but you didn't mention any of those things. How come?
Very good point. You know, I think Google especially, right, is known for their fun, right? All the different activities. And it is fun, but I think those things are a bit of a Band-Aid. It's a Band-Aid only if you don't have the culture, something solid underneath it. And I didn't mention those things because I think they are temporary. Just like when we get anything new and fun and shiny, like it's great until the newness wears off, then you're back at what's left underneath and the core. And that has to do with your core company culture, your core company values. And so you can have ping pong tables and offer pizza and food and all of those things. And it's great. Maybe people will stay a little bit longer if they're unhappy. But at the end of the day, if they don't have flexibility in their schedule, which is what's important today, especially through the pandemic with so many people now working from home, having tasted that flexibility, they are not going back. Ping pong table or not, right? They need to know that they matter. They need to know that their voice will be heard and that their ideas will be implemented or at least tried out, that they can actually contribute to the success of their company. They're working towards something. They want to know that they can actually make a difference by adding value from their perspective, from their experiences in the success of what it is they're working for. It's like you may have heard, you know, when you're raising children and you have a hard time, you're a real picky eater. Well, they always say, you know, get your child to participate in cooking the meal or give you ideas for what to make. Because when they are part of the process, when they're a part of the decision making and they feel that they are actually contributing and that their ideas are valued and tried, then suddenly they're empowered and they're become a part of the process. They're going to become proud and they're going to be more willing to go that extra mile. And it doesn't even matter about the money either. Statistically, people, it has shown that people are willing to work for less money if they feel they're doing something meaningful and that they contribute to that success.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think a lot of those things are physical manifestations of a culture in a company where they kind of organically show up. Mm-hmm. And those physical manifestations will change when all of a sudden we're all working from home, right? But if I am putting those on there as a Band-Aid, and they're at the office, and then all of a sudden everyone's working from home, if I don't have that underlying culture as my foundation, then all of those physical things, they're not going to do anything, right? I mean, they disappear at that moment. And so really what I hear you talking about is building that foundation, understanding the vision, the values, the mission, so that regardless of the things that change, because they will change, right? And we all know that
business, we've experienced that.
Yeah, it will change. And sometimes in very unexpected ways, like the pandemic.
And rapidly too.
Yeah, very rapidly. But if you've got that great foundation, you can not just survive that, but you can thrive through those challenging times where other companies may not be able to do that because they don't have, they're not built on that same cultural foundation.
100%. And I do think that when you look at the companies who did not only survive, but have thrived during this, part of it is they were maybe set up in advance to be more, you know, service oriented, and they were set up in a way to be able to deliver. So that's different. But the longevity of that, they came out strong because when things happened immediately, those changes you referred to and the swiftness of them, they were able to be agile and flexible. Those are also very key, important traits and characteristics right now that companies need to adopt. And those who had that established or who quickly identified and said, oh my gosh, I never realized before how important my people are, those who embraced that are the ones who are now thriving through this and have developed new processes as a result of that. And that's really what has to be done now.
Yeah, absolutely. So speaking of processes, you right, McDonald's vet, I imagine that you've known lots of people in the fast food industry and are still tied into that. I have a question for you. My first job was also in fast food. Certainly not as young as you, but I worked at the local Dairy Queen.
Yeah.
Do companies still teach people how to count back change, or is that just a thing of the past? Dude, I sound
old.
Oh
my God, you have just hit a nerve with me. That makes me insane. People don't think today. They don't. I have learned basic simple math and counting back change because of, just like you learned in Dairy Queen, because of my working as a cashier at McDonald's. And I can still picture and hear my dad and the manager tell me, lay the bill. If it's a $20 bill, you lay it across the register, because there will always be those people who say, no, I gave you a 50, or, you know, and this way you can show it right there, because then you're kind of stuck. He said, she said, right? So you lay your bill and you count back, whatever, if it was 1534, then you count back 35, then you go the penny, and then the nickel rounded up, and you count it back. Today, oh my gosh, if the computer, the register doesn't flash up and tell them how much to give back, they are lost. Like, again, from my McDonald's days, I also round up. So if I owe an odd amount, and I can round it up by giving them an additional 6 cents, for example, to make it to, right, to get back that quarter or the dime instead of a bunch of single. They look at me, they're so confused. Well, but wait a minute, it costs this, and why did you give me more? And I'm like, so instead of costing, you know, 36, now it's going to be 25, and now you can just give me back three quarter, you know, like it just over their head, completely lost. No, nobody can do any basic math. The machine, the computer has to spit out a number to tell them this is the money you have to return. It is so sad.
It seems though like a skill that maybe is just not as important anymore. Like I like you, occasionally get frustrated, but I have started not to use cash very often anywhere. True. I mean, it's rare that I use cash. It's rare that I have cash, much less use it. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if maybe that isn't a huge shift, because certainly when I grew up, everybody paid, right? It was cash or check.
Yeah, sure.
Today, probably 95% of transactions, if not more, are all card-based.
I think especially since the pandemic, because the same thing, I just don't have cash. Something came up the other day and I said to her, who has cash these days? Like, no one uses it. But that was only in the last 2.5 years, right? Like, this problem has been going on for a long time while people were still using cash a lot. I think now with the pandemic, that whole thing, people just stopped caring and paying with cash. And a lot of places don't even take cash anymore. But, you know, that's not right either. Think of, there are, not everyone has a credit card or that's has right. a bank account system set up that way. So that's not really right either. I think we have to make sure everyone has the equal opportunity to buy whatever they want, whatever they need. But I agree though. I do think that especially since the pandemic, people are not using it as much. And so now you're right. Maybe it falls off as a value, but this was happening long before that. And it's just, to me, lazy, and it's lack of education. Like, I was taught to do that. And management is not teaching their people to do that, because instead the computer. Or how about, Rob, do you find that you'll go to order something and maybe you want something a little different and they're like, oh, I can't do that because it's not in the computer that way. I'm like, what happened to the human brain? Yeah. Like, can we just not be human here for a minute and like just tell them to swap this out for that or whatever it is, you know? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, there is definitely and I understand in fast food, right? I mean, the fast in is food, in yes. the word, in the name. And so the less that you can make extra work for people, the easier it is for everyone. Mm-hmm. I do think though that, and this is part of our own doing, right? And cashiers, you're not off the hook. You should learn to count back change, but your manager should teach you that. But our desire for things to be fast, to be low cost, I think exacerbates. Mm. And I think we're part of the problem.
We are.
As customers.
I agree. 100%. Yeah. And restaurants, and I don't want this all to be about restaurants, because truly we all experience this and everything that we do. When I go to Best Buy and I'm looking at buying a large appliance or, you know, whatever, no matter on Amazon, no matter what experience online products, we have definitely perpetuated and I think heightened the problem because Amazon, right? We've gotten spoiled. We know we can get it overnight if we need to, and we can return it and it's free. Like, we've lost all patience. And, you know, in the restaurants, what used to be called fast food, and now they call it quick service restaurant. It's a bit of a euphemism, but it's not always quick service either, you know, to your point, right? But our demands, our expectations have certainly changed. And I do think it's a problem. I think we as customers can be very biting, not patient, not appreciative. And especially now with the lack of, you know, the staffing problem that we're having with not enough people on a floor to help with any sort of retail product. And sometimes even on the phone, it's very frustrating because we still want that same service back. And when we don't get that, it's we don't have the patience anymore. We're not very kind.
We can all use a little bit more empathy for all of the people that we deal with, regardless of where they work, what service they're providing, what product they're working on. I agree that we can all be more patient and more empathetic because we don't know what's happening on the other side, what they're going through, how long they've been there. You know, maybe this is hour number 12 of 8 days straight that they've been working, and maybe they're stressed out because, you know, their kids are struggling with school, or, you know, their car just broke down and it's extra cost that they, you know, are worried about how they're going to pay for that. Or like me, had a kidney stone and got all kinds of hospital bills that they weren't expecting, right? I mean, you just don't know what someone's going through in a given day. And the more that we can be nice to people, which is also contagious.
Yes, I love that.
The better it is for everyone involved. So Jill, we've talked about all kinds of things. We've talked about onboarding. We've talked about education. We've talked about career pathing. We've talked about questions that you can ask if you're interviewing at a place, and questions that interviewers can ask to determine a really good fit. What have we not talked about that you really want to talk about?
I touched on the educational piece, and I think I just want to highlight that because it's so very important, because it really establishes the ground rules of who you are as a company. But then the flip side, it allows the opportunity for the interviewee to not only say, is this the kind of company I want to work for, but it allows them to understand, is this a company that's going to see me, that's going to hear me? And so I would just really encourage companies to take that step, to really think about the educational manual as much as, if not as important or more, before the operations manual is presented to your people, to really think about that. And empathy. So the recipe that kind of is the underlying foundation for my process, the inside out recipe, is really the 3+1 ingredients. And when you touched on empathy, so the empathy is the fourth extra bonus. So it's education, it's engagement, and trust. You have to really trust your people. And that fourth bonus E is empathy, because just like when you cook, for any of those of you who are listening, if you cook, you start by seasoning with salt, usually salt and pepper. But salt in particular is super important when you cook, because it serves to concentrate the flavors. It helps, you know, remove a lot of the water, and it concentrates and heightens the natural sweetness and the flavors in whatever food it is that you're cooking. So as a parallel, I use the same idea with empathy, and that you can never use too much of this ingredient. It's never going to be too salty. It's never going to be too empathetic. But that really brings in that human element, that human piece. And it touches on what you just said, Rob, is we don't know what's going on with that other person. We don't know what just happened at home. We don't know who they may have just lost. Like we have no idea. So when we remind ourselves to be human and have that empathy, people will feel that you care. And that is priceless, and it will take you so far. So if nothing else, as a company, think about really showing empathy to your people, and watch what happens. Watch the change happen when you create those relationships because of empathy. That would be my challenge to everyone, to really think about that.
I love that challenge, Jill. Thank you so much. If you want to learn more about what Jill can offer you, if you want to work on your company culture, feel free to check out the website. We'll have that in the liner notes. You can connect on LinkedIn. We'll also put that in the show notes as well. Jill Raff, thanks so much for joining Next in Q today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it was my pleasure. I really enjoyed speaking with you, Rob. Thanks so much. And thanks for all that you're doing to put the word out to everyone to learn and be inspired and motivated, and really give them some good things to think about to implement in their businesses.
Next in Q is brought to you by Happy2 and is produced by me, Rob Dwyer. If you enjoy this podcast, please, by all means, subscribe and or rate this podcast in iTunes or your favorite podcast app. But more importantly, please tell just one person about this podcast. Word of mouth is the best way for people to discover new content. As always, thanks for listening.